Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are, well, let me see, how many weeks has it been since Constitution Day? Because, let me see, that was 1 week, 2 weeks. We're in the third week. And so it looks like because we've got a bit more to go, it might be just under 4 weeks of the Constitution Month. Just so you understand, if you don't go through the Constitution, you'll have no idea those things, those rights that you have and how they've been lost. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and we're also the only show, we are the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions. If you're looking for furniture, we highly recommend TimberNation.com for your hardwood, solid hardwood furnishings. I mean, who doesn't want solid hardwood? It's not particle board. You don't get the formaldehyde poisoning. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why, you know, you're paying outrageous prices. I mean, if you look at how much you're paying for crappy furniture that's going to fall, wouldn't even survive your next move. Take a look at TimberNation.com. And we also are promoting the Radio Dust Covers at RadioDustCovers.com. Go check out what you can get and how you can actually protect your system. You know, because if there's something that you use but you don't use it all the time, you have it off a lot, you know, in other words, it's off and not running that often, then while it's running, you want to have it, while it's not running, you want to have it covered. Sometimes you don't want to, most of the time, you don't want to necessarily, you know, keep your, like a computer or an amplifier running and keep it covered because it's not allowing it to air. You'll overheat and destroy it. But, you know, like a printer and some of those types of things, you can even keep those things on and they don't generate a lot of heat unless you're doing a lot of duty cycling. In other words, printing a lot of pages, then you want to make sure that your cover's off. But for the most part, protect your equipment and it will last longer. Red Pill Expo, getting closer and closer to Red Pill Expo. Hoping that you're planning on coming. If you haven't noticed the tone, the milieu, the environment, and the tyranny that we're looking at within the United States, we're steps away from actually turning into probably the most communist state in all of the world. And Biden doesn't care. He thinks he has all this power. Well, he believes because he's delusional. We have to wake him and the federal government up. And what's really sad is you're seeing more and more people being a part of the federal government that believe that they have unlimited powers. In watching some of the post, or I should say the inquisition of the January 6th and testimony in front of Congress and so forth, these men crying about, you know, that they're out there supporting the Constitution and denying these people their rights and that these people are terrible people. Are you kidding me? Evil is good and good is evil because obviously that's the paradigm that they are creating in the way they're presenting the information, the way these guys are, these guards and security are talking. Are you kidding me? Man up and go read the Constitution and realize how you're on the wrong side of history. Anyway, what we want to do is we want to go straight into Professor Lash's three-page dialogue regarding the ratification of the 14th Amendment. You're going to find this very interesting. And so our comment line is 425-270-5416. Now, to be clear, the Civil Rights Act was written at the very beginning of 1866. The 14th Amendment was ratified by, or actually was passed by both houses of Congress in, I believe it was June 1866. 1866 was also a big election year. And so for the ratification, because every 2 years, right, every 2 years there's this ratification, or not ratification, there's an election of all the representatives. And this is Kurt Lash's account of the ratification of the 14th Amendment, his historical account, as he goes through the records. For the ratification of the federal Constitution, the key votes occurred on different days in separate ratifying conventions. For the ratification of the 14th Amendment, the key vote took place on a single day, November 6, 1866. On that day, congressional Republicans won a landslide victory in the National Congressional elections. Both Republicans and Democrats made the election of 1866 a referendum on the 14th Amendment. Had the Republicans lost a congressional majority, this would have doomed any hopes for passing the amendment and may have triggered a new civil war. Instead, the Republicans received a national mandate to move forward in the effort to secure the amendment's ratification and protect the rights of the American citizens in the southern states. The conjunction of a proposed constitutional amendment and major national, and you remember, the 1866 was after the 14th Amendment, November 6, 1866. Folks, that was after the amendment was already passed by Congress. So at this point in time, had the people really looked at the 14th Amendment as a bad thing, they would have gotten rid of the standing guard, those supposedly radical Republicans, but they reelected them, and actually they gave them even a greater mandate. So anyway, the conjunction of a proposed constitutional amendment and a major national election created a political dynamic quite different than that which existed at the time of the founding in 1877. The voters who needed to be persuaded were the members of the individual state ratifying conventions. Pamphlets and newspaper editorials were generally written, and the conventions themselves often included days of detailed analysis and debate on the proposed Constitution. In 1866, by contrast, the relevant voters were the national electorate. The newspapers and pamphlets enjoyed a far greater circulation and national penetration and were put to use by two dominant political parties with the ability to coordinate and widely disseminate their position on the proposed 14th Amendment. Relatively little debate on the amendment took place in the state assemblies. A great deal of debate took place on the national campaign trail. This different dynamic has important implications for those seeking to determine the original meaning of the 14th Amendment. Originalist scholars of the 14th Amendment have long lamented the sounds of silence, quote-unquote, in the state ratifying conventions when combined with the coercive measures Congress used to secure ratification by the southern states. This silence seems to make determining the original meaning of the 14th Amendment doubly problematic. There is little we can glean from the ratification assemblies in the states, and those assemblies, and see, this is why I'm telling you, if you go through the 14th Amendment, the best debates were right there in Congress. That's how it was best defined, because the states, I went through, I could not find, as he says, you couldn't find a really heated or good debate. And those assemblies themselves seem to lack the same kind of popular legitimacy as those that met at the time of the founding. The result has been far thinner originalist account of the meaning of the 14th Amendment than that which exists for the original Constitution. Once we understand that the key debates took place as a part of a national election and not in individual state ratifying conventions, however, much of the presumed methodology, difficulty regarding the originalist study of the 14th Amendment disappears. There was a deep and robust public discussion of the amendment in 1866, one that culminated in a landslide national election in favor of adding the text to the Constitution, as had been the case at the time of the founding supporters and opponents for the proposed constitutional text developed sophisticated and specific arguments regarding the meaning of the text. the Democratic Party and men like President Andrew Johnson, O.H. Browning, and S.S. Nicholas played the roles once played by anti-federalists like Patrick Henry, Melanchthon Smith, and Brutus. The Republican Party and men like John Bingham, Jacob Howard, and George W. Pascal stepped into roles once played by Federalists like James Wilson, Alexander Hamilton, and James Madison. Republicans even had their own Publius and the pseudonym Madison, who published essays in the New York Times that explained and defined the need for the proposed 14th Amendment. Because originalist accounts of the 14th Amendment have tended to focus on the framing debates of the 39th Congress, they have both undervalued and underexplored the public political debates of 1866. Most critically, they have completely missed President Johnson's important role as leader of the anti-amendment party in the drama of the 14th Amendment. As the de facto national head of the Democratic Party, Johnson took the lead in crafting arguments against the amendment. Through what Bruce Ackerman has coined the, quote, paradox of resistance, close quote, Johnson's, well, we'll just take it up from the paradox of resistance. We'll pick it back up from there. But as you can see, he's giving you some details of where this really was hashed out and giving you the details of how overwhelming it was actually received by the states. And so we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. So, okay, folks, let's just keep this in mind, that history is very clear if you get to the source documents. But when you start reading editorialized versions and people who are basically injecting their own narrative or a specific narrative for a specific purpose, then you can be very misled on history. Now, to be clear, as we look at history, one will find that America was not such racists that, you know, everybody basically looked at America as, and the way it's being redefined, that, you know, they really marginalized this 14th Amendment and what had occurred in stepping up, because if you understand the, how the states have basically subjugated themselves to protecting the individual citizens, where states had latitude before. States could actually regulate. They could create emergency powers to take away all your rights like we're living in today. That's, they had the ability to do that prior to the 14th Amendment. Once the 14th Amendment passed, states were constrained, and states willingly, and the people willingly constrained their states so that blacks in America, the freemen in America, could have equal footing and equal opportunity. Now, even though this was a huge success, this doesn't mean that there weren't maniacal people in power to create things like Jim Crow laws, which were outright violations of individual privileges and immunities. The only reason that people hoodwinked this and everything else, and America kind of fell asleep, because most people didn't follow these types of details. And it wasn't until America really started waking up. And actually, if you read, what book was it? I'm trying to remember. I believe it was a Thomas Sowell book that pointed out that when you look at the different races in the 1920s, you'll find that there was equal prosperity amongst blacks as there were whites. It wasn't until the fall of the Depression and the fall of the stock market in 1929, where everybody was hit really hard. What ended up happening that created a divider in America was that the whites were left out to struggle on their own. And Hoover created projects for blacks to give them free housing. What he was doing was he was basically, it goes down to the old adage of how do you trap a pig in the wilderness. You start feeding the pig at one point or one location, and the pig will come and eat. Then you build one wall, you build a second, third, and eventually the pig becomes so accustomed to eating within the walls of this cage that as he comes in, you put up the fourth wall, he doesn't care because he thinks you're going to continue feeding him. Well, the exact same thing happened when they started building these projects in Georgia and in other places. Every major city got federal funding in building projects for blacks at that point in time. This did not, it, what it did was it created the entitlement state, and it started creating, let's call it a divisive nature, because all of a sudden the messaging was, we owe this to you, we owe this to you, we owe this to you, where the whites weren't getting anything. And so this created division. What this progressive Hoover, who was he was one of the authorized biographers of Wilson. He was a part of Wilson's administration. He may have been Republican, but he was not a individual liberty supporting Republican. He was a big government socialist. All of these men, even Coolidge, who was Republican, admitted to being socialist. Teddy Roosevelt wanted to be communist. FDR was communist. I am telling you, when you really start looking at how things started playing out after the 14th Amendment, we were zigging and zagging, and government was doing maniacal things, but it wasn't the people. And unfortunately, the people at this point in time, everybody in the Depression, everybody was struggling. Well, except supposedly for the blacks. But one of the things that they did was they started creating these projects, and then the Negro Project came along underneath FDR. And the Negro Project was the establishment of Planned Parenthood and abortion clinics that they actually started locating close to these community centers where the blacks were being placed into these projects. And so this was all a part of eugenics. If you really look at the history, there were some really evil people that hated blacks in America. And those with power who, you know, wanted to actually create this divisive thing, and that's exactly what they did. And they've been playing us for years and years and years. the Republicans and those who have loved liberty, and when I say the Republicans, I'm talking about the people, not the politicians, because too many politicians were equally corrupt. But most people didn't really see and understand, because there wasn't much difference in the early 1900s between a Republican and a Democrat. They were both socialists. The only difference, the real difference when we had Coolidge, was Coolidge understood the limitations of the Constitution. And so, anyway, I apologize for going down this, but I think that when you actually start really examining a macro view of our entire history, you will find that, yes, there were key players that were responsible for injecting divisive policies that created a division amongst blacks and whites in America and maintained that division up in it. And to today, it's even worse. And you're going, why? Why is it that we allow ourselves to be manipulated to taking these types of positions? Are we really predisposed at birth? No, we're not. We become predisposed because of the type of dialogue and the type of things that we're being taught. And our kids are all being taught in the school system of white guilt and all of these other things. I'm going, oh my gosh, we cannot allow this to continue. I got to say this right now. What is it going to take to get you involved? What is it going to take to stand up and stop this madness? Let me get on, while you're thinking about that, let me get on to what Professor Lash is talking about here. Through what Bruce Ackerman has coined the, quote, paradox of resistance, close quote, Johnson's sustained attempt to defeat the amendment both deepened and helped shape public understanding of the proposed text and its impacts on the autonomy of the states. It was President Johnson, for example, who first declared that congressional efforts to protect the, quote, privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States required a constitutional amendment. When Congress submitted a proposed amendment that adopted the president's own language, and he says locution, Johnson responded by challenging the amendment that adopted the president. Okay, Johnson responded by challenging the very legitimacy of the Republican Congress and making opposition to the amendment the focus of the Democratic platform in the fall elections. The subsequent national debt debate between Johnson and Democrats and congressional Republicans clarified the choice facing the country: either accept President Johnson's assurance that the Southern states could be trusted to protect the national rights of American citizens, such as freedom of speech, assembly, or to adopt the 14th Amendment and empower the national government to protect the privileges and immunities of the citizens of the United States. Viewing the ratification of the 14th Amendment through the lens of a national election also allows us to see how politically salient events during the summer of 1866 transformed a dry theoretical discussion of the amendment's merits into an argument over what was literally a matter of life and death in the Southern states. The July 3, 1866 massacre of freedmen meeting in convention in New Orleans became a national scandal. Now, did you learn about this massacre in New Orleans? No, you didn't. And who did they massacre? It was the freedmen meeting in convention, particularly when it became clear that the state officials had led the attack. Republicans used the New Orleans not only as a stark example of the need to adopt the 14th Amendment in order to protect the rights of speech and assembly against the state abridgment, President Johnson's feckless response to the massacre only heightened public concerns that the administration had no intention of securing the rights of national citizenship in the Southern states. This political blunder became a disaster when Johnson and Secretary of the Interior, O.H. Browning, published a letter representing the administration's position that the 14th Amendment was unnecessary in light of existing protections in state constitutions. Republicans around the country excoriated the letter and pointed to the bloodstained hands of Louisiana officials as evidence that the southern states could not be trusted to protect the national rights of speech and assembly. Only weeks after the publication of Browning's letter, Republicans enjoyed a landslide victory at the polls and a popular mandate to secure the ratification of the 14th Amendment. Despite the defeat of my policy, President Andrew Johnson had one final act to play in the drama of the 14th Amendment. And with that, we will actually take another break and we will wrap this up. And I hope you find that this look at history that Kurt Lash is providing is a better macro view of the 14th Amendment and how this nation absolutely needed. I mean, there was no reason why states didn't have Bill of Rights and protecting the U.S. citizens and their own citizens. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me finish this up. Despite the defeat of my policy, Andrew Johnson had one final act to play in the drama of the 14th Amendment. With ratification at an impasse, due to the Southern state policy of masterly inactivity, President Johnson met with conservative advisors and drafted an alternative amendment that he hoped would attract the support of Northern and Southern conservatives, unlike the proposed 14th Amendment, which declared that no state shall henceforth violate the rights of the citizens of the United States. Johnson's alternative version erased the proposed Privileges and Immunities Clause and replaced it with the passive reaffirmation of the Comity Clause instead of requiring states to enforce substantive rights like speech and assembly. Johnson's alternative would merely require the states provide equal access to a limited set of conferred rights. The proposal went nowhere, and Johnson proceeded to pass a series of legislative acts that ultimately secured the ratification of the amendment. Now, let me point out that what Johnson was doing as the Democrat, he was pointing out what the real problem was, or actually what the gem of the 14th Amendment truly was. Because, as we know, President Johnson was a Democrat, and he had no respect of ensuring that the freedmen would be treated as full citizens of the United States and have the same protections under the law. And that massacre actually proved that, where the government actually went after the blacks or the freedmen in convention in New Orleans. The 1866 national political struggle between Johnson and congressional Republicans opens a historical window on the original meaning and public understanding of Section 1 of the 14th Amendment by making the proposed amendment the focus of the dispute between the contending parties. And so what's really sad is if you talk to anybody today about the 14th Amendment, they tell you that this is a terrible thing. And then you have to ask yourself, so it was okay that all the freedmen were massacred because they wouldn't have had the protection of, under the law of assembly or what have you. So it was okay that the states could get away with, you know, basically taking their rights away where other people would not, would have these protections, where whites in the southern states had protections and the blacks didn't. That's okay with you. Are you kidding me? Seriously, folks, what is wrong with these people who are arguing against the 14th Amendment? I have to ask myself, am I talking to somebody who really understands, or am I talking to somebody who is a racist? And that's why they understand. Johnson triggered a sustained national public debate regarding the nature and importance of the privileges and immunities of the citizens of the United States. The events of the summer of 1866 further deepened the national debate by focusing on the particular enumerated rights of speech and assembly rights that were widely accepted examples of the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Johnson's final effort to replace the language of the Privileges or Immunities Clause with the language of the Comity Clause illustrates his understanding that the amendment as proposed was both different from and more expansive than the Comity Clause. This cuts equally against two recent lines of scholarship, one viewing the Privileges or Immunities Clause as providing nothing more than a degree of equal protection of for state conferred rights. Now, this is what a lot of conservatives are trying to argue. The other, reading the clause as opening the door to judicial identification and enforcement of unenumerated rights. And that's absolutely happening by the left as well. But this amendment does not open that door of unenumerated rights. It only points to those, let's call them the protective clauses or the further declarations of protections that are defined within the Constitution. The third in a series of works on the origins of the Privileges and Immunities Clause, this article focuses on the public consideration of the 14th Amendment as proposed. Two previous articles considered the antebellum understanding of phrases like privileges and immunities of the citizens of the United States and the drafting debates in the 39th Congress. All three aspects, pre-amendment legal understanding framers, understanding the contemporaneous public understanding, are critical components of a comprehensive view of the original meaning of the Privileges or Immunities Clause. Together, they mutually reinforce a conclusion that the phrase privileges and immunities of the citizens of the United States referred to the personal rights enumerated in the federal constitutions. These rights included substantive personal rights listed in the first eight amendments, as well as the equal rights of sojourning citizens protected under the Comity Clause of Article 4. Now, I hope you found this both enlightening and informative, because most people are not real students of history, and we rely upon what I would say the revisionists and the progressives, who are actually trying to rewrite with revisions of what they believe happened, because they're creating a very specific narrative to get you to believe a very specific thing. This is very divisive. This is evil. And this is how successful these folks have been in the United States in actually dividing us. I mean, all you have to do is look today and see how well divided the races, the sexes. I mean, they're dividing us in every demographic group they possibly can. And why? Because they know if we unite and all stand for equal protection of liberty for all, and the individual rights of liberty and sovereignty to be protected, if we do that, if we unite upon individual liberty and individual sovereignty, that we all have the rights to choose for ourselves, then they've lost. It's that simple. The 15th Amendment. And so this was proposed in 1869 and ratified a year later. Section 1, the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. So, in other words, another response to the South in trying to take away the rights to vote. And even though there was a punishment in the 14th Amendment that any state that did that, they would lose apportionment for all those people that were affected, they still had to put more teeth in this because the states were still willing to take those types of punishments or the loss of apportionment. So Section 2 of the 15th Amendment, the Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. So once again, we're starting to find that they're adding that little clause that Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation, that the execution of the laws will be done still by the militia. Nowhere in that statement does it say that the federal government will have the ability to enforce this law by creating their own enforcement agency. It still points in the Constitution only to the militia. And by this time, the militia was gone. And by this time, the federal government was already beginning to create its own enforcement agencies. Okay, so now we go 40 years. We jump 40 years in American history from 1869 to 1909. And this is the 16th Amendment, and this was proposed in 1909. And it was questionably, and as a matter of fact, Bill Benson has the evidence of how this was questionably ratified, and he actually says it was not constitutionally ratified. So the 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment both are actually amendments that would probably fall away when the states actually do the audit of Republic Review. Probably. No guarantee. But Bill Benson has put together the argument that it will go away. But anyway, here's the 16th Amendment. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. Now, that this amendment only gives Congress the ability to tax. It does not give them the ability to spend money on anything that they want to spend money on. They still have only the enumerated powers. This was already an enumerated power to tax and lay taxes, lay direct taxes. This just changed how they could lay the taxes, and instead of it being based on apportionment and by census and so forth, this now allowed them to create a taxation of however they wanted to without regard to census or without apportionment amongst the states. But it doesn't say anywhere in here where it really allows them to actually take a progressive scale where they could tax one person more than another. Here's the thing. The uniformity clause still required a uniform way that the federal government. So this did not address the uniformity clause. And this is where this, when they start doing progressive, or, you know, they tax you more than they tax somebody else, actually is a violation of the Uniformity Clause. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so one of the things, that I'm going to read Article 1, Section 8, and the preamble, because the preamble sets the tone of how the government is to treat the states. And it says right here, to lay taxes and collect duties, or to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, and excises, all taxes, shall be uniform throughout the United States. And then it goes into listing what these powers are. And so, keeping in mind that the Uniformity Clause requires that there has to be uniformity of how the taxes are being applied. So if they're going to tax people's income, it has to be uniform throughout the United States. Now, some people would argue, well, by creating a scale, if you make this much money, then you can, you know, you only have to pay this much tax. If you make more money, by creating this progressive scale, as long as it's applied to everybody, well, actually, it's not. Because there are certain people that get what they call write-offs, and the way the tax system works, it is not uniform, because there are plenty of people that get these, what they call these exclusions, write-offs, or what have you, that make it so that they don't even pay hardly any taxes at all. Now, how is that uniform? It's not uniform. And what it does is it gives advantages to some and doesn't give the treatment of others. But this has never been argued. But the fact is this, and I'm going to read it again. Show me where they take out the uniformity and allow any arbitrary percentile and application to be done. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, without apportionment among the several states, and without regard to any census or enumeration. Okay, so they can apply taxes to income without regard of census or anything else, but it doesn't take, they do not mention that they can be ununiform, or they no longer have to apply the uniformity clause to these taxes. They didn't address it, which means that the uniformity clause still stands, that these taxes, these these income taxes that they have, that they're deriving, have to be done within the constraints of that uniformity clause. But that is something that is not being applied. So anyway, Article 17 or the 17th Amendment. Tell me where, because there's lots of people that talk about this amendment is terrible. And I agree, it's a bad amendment because it removes the state's relationship with the Senate, because the Senate is supposed to be protecting the state's interests. That's the design of the Senate, because they're the sovereigns. And so by removing how the senators are chosen doesn't necessarily change that. But tell me where new powers are now given to the Senate, where the Senate can do things that the prior Senate couldn't do. Okay, so tell me that. As I read this, the Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state, elected by the people thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote. The electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislatures. When vacancies happen in the so here's the question. If electors in the states shall have the qualifications requisite for electors, or the electors in each state, why are they throwing this in here? They're not changing anything. The electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislatures. Okay, so that's already in Article 1 of the Constitution. Don't understand why that was thrown in. That could actually be removed because it doesn't change anything other than how the Senates are, you know, and the Senates are being composed. When vacancies happen in the representation of any state, the executive authority of such state shall issue writs of election to fill these vacancies, provided that the legislature of any state may empower the executive thereof to make temporary appointments until the people fill the vacancies by election as the legislatures may direct. This amendment shall not be construed as to affect the election or term of any senator chosen before it becomes valid as part of the Constitution. And so the only thing that really has changed is elected by the people thereof for 6 years instead of chosen by the state legislature. Okay? So where did the Senate all of a sudden change its powers? Now it can do all sorts of things because it, where did the states lose its sovereignty by this? This only, what this did was it perverted the representation of the Senate in representing the sovereignty of the states in the laws, but it doesn't grant them the abilities to take away powers from the federal government. It only takes away their representation. This grants them no new powers. The 17th Amendment is not a good amendment, but it's not as evil as many people make it out to be. It doesn't change that the states still have the Article 5 protection within the Constitution. And oh, by the way, did you know that there's this thing called the Amendment Protection Clause? And so we talked about this, I think it was in the first week. This is in Article 5. And so it basically says here, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses of the ninth section of the first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage. So what this 17th Amendment actually has done is it's taken away the state suffrage, its ability to actually have representation in voting for them. Because now the senators no longer represent the state. When the state says, hey, you've got to do this, the senators do whatever they want to do. And so they have no recourse because they can't recall them. This is why those states that rejected the 17th Amendment can maintain their suffrage, can maintain that direct appointment, because they will not be affected if they reject it. Here's the thing, and I have an article on this. The 17th Amendment does not need to be repealed. It can be rescinded. Any state that ratified the 17th Amendment can now reject it because the federal government accepted the change of rejection from Delaware. In 2010, Delaware, because Biden was the vice president, and apparently he stumbled over the fact, hey, Delaware, you guys rejected the 17th Amendment. We need to be a part of that. So why don't you guys rescind your rejection and formally ratify the 17th Amendment? Well, if one state can change its position on an amendment, then all states can change its position. It opens the door to allow everybody. And I'm telling you, friends, you can get your state, if it's ratified, like Wyoming, many of these states that actually want to undo the 17th Amendment, they can actually do that. All they've got to do is formally withdraw their ratification and formally reject the 17th Amendment. And then they're no longer bound by not following the election of their senators, and they can go back to appointing because of Article 5 of the Constitution. No state shall lose its suffrage without its consent. So even though it consented before, it can now withdraw that and take back its suffrage. That's how simple it is. The door has to swing both ways. It can't just swing one way to take advantage of bad ruling or a bad amendment to take away the suffrage of the state. The whole intent of the Senate was to ensure that the states had representation as sovereigns. Anyway, let's get into the 18th Amendment. And we've got about a minute and a half. And let's see, this is kind of long, but 18th Amendment proposed 1917 and ratified 1919. Section 1, after 1 year of the ratification of this article, the manufacture, sell, or transportation of intoxicating liquors within the importation thereof into or the exportation thereof from the United States and all territory subjects to the jurisdiction thereof for beverage purposes is hereby prohibited. The Congress and the several states shall have concurrent power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Now, does it say that they can enforce this power by execution, they execute these laws? No, it's by appropriate legislation. That's all they can do. This third article shall be inoperative unless it shall be ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of the several states, as provided in the Constitution within the 7 years from the date of the submission hereof to the states by the Congress. So in other words, for the first time, they put this limitation or an expiration date that this amendment can float out there for, 7 years? And so, yeah, because it says right there, 7 years from the date of submission. And if it doesn't get ratified by then, it basically expires. They didn't do a very good job in putting that into wording, but what they did do here was they created a new power or a new law that the federal government would have jurisdiction over by stopping the production of hard liquor. Now, this didn't give them the ability to create their own enforcement. The militia was still the only means of enforcement. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.